You are in the right place if you are here for Parenting in a Pandemic, Screen Time in Early Childhood. My name is Erin Walsh, and I am the co-founder of Spark and Stitch Institute, together with my dad, who's here. Dad, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you for joining us. My name is Dr. Dave Walsh, Erin's dad.
And, you know, we've been doing this work together for a long time. I got introduced to the work when my dad started work on media's impact on child health and development when I was a young person myself. And it's been a blast for both of us together to translate research on media's impact on child health and development into what we hope is more easy to understand language. Because, of course, from the time that, Dad, you started this work until today, as I look at the world that my young children are growing up in, it is a world apart, and our ability to sort of decide what to pay attention to and what matters and what are the ingredients for thriving in a world dominated by screens is sort of accelerating importance every day. And during the pandemic, of course, our questions about screens, our reliance on screens has only accelerated. So we know that you've probably been in a bunch of Zoom calls, and if you feel like you stumbled into this one, this is just a reminder that you're in the right place if during this pandemic, as a parent or a caregiver, you feel profoundly grateful for screens right now as a source of connection, as a source of entertainment, as a source of getting information, as a source of learning, and as a source of just getting through the day during a very stressful and challenging time. So many of us feel more acutely grateful maybe than we have been before, but you're also in the right place if you feel profoundly resentful of screens right now for their limitations. I know that for my kids, it's novel to be on Zoom calls with their grandparents over there. But it pales in comparison to sharing space and hugs and laughs. And that can be really challenging, as well as the concerns and the power struggles and the sort of time vortex that screens can become. So you're also in the right place if you are here looking for both affirmation and advice. And we put in parentheses, you know, in the right combination. I am a parent as well, and I know that because things are so stressful, some days I just want a hug and for somebody to tell me I'm doing a good job. And other days I feel sort of calm and able to take in problem solving and information. And so wherever you're at today, we hope that this very short, right? This is not a deep dive. We're not going to talk about all things related to screen time in early childhood. We just want to offer a couple of ideas that might help give you guidance. And so if you just want a hug, take that from us. You're doing great. Thank you. And if you want some of that guidance, you can always watch and rewatch as well. And we're here because before the pandemic, right, the world has changed a lot. If you just compare the media ecology of my own childhood, right, in terms of devices, how we got them, how we shared them, and you compare that to the media ecology of young children today, and it is a world apart, right? Pretty much from the time their first ultrasound photo goes online and well through those first years, they are exposed to more devices, more stories, more powerfully presented than any other time in history. And of course, this image you see on the screen here, that was, you know, before the pandemic, right, Dad?
Right. You know, Erin, go back to that screen just for a second. Because, you know, this people talk about this being a digital revolution, and it really is. And revolution literally comes from the Latin word meaning turning the world upside down. And that's really, this technology has really changed the world in really revolutionary ways. And then comes along the pandemic, which is in itself yet another revolution, changing things dramatically. Schools closing, staying at home. You can go on to the next slide, Erin. And so, you know, we talk about the power of the technology, and that's what I think we need to remember as we have this brief conversation about, you know, technology and early childhood. The technologies that we're talking about, whether it's online communication or Zoom or all of the things that are now just part of our everyday lives, we need to remember that they are neither good nor bad. they are capable of both. What they clearly are very, very powerful. And as you know, if you've joined Aaron and myself or any other webinars, or if you're familiar with our work, we like to kind of bring together two fields of study. One is technology. The other is brain development. Because when we talk about kids, we're learning a tremendous amount about their brains. And as Aaron said, we're not taking a deep dive in this particular webinar. So I just want to make one point that we know one of the basic principles of brain development is that whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at. The scientists have a term for that. They call it the neurons that fire together, wire together. But when you translate that scientific language into everyday life, we need to remember that whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at. Whether that's math facts, whether that's, perseverance, the list, it's an endless list. Whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at.
And we've been saying that for years in our workshops. And of course, one of the challenges of parenting during a pandemic is that some of the experiences, whether it's childcare or preschool or even playing at local parks, have become less accessible or inaccessible during this time. And so because a lot of our daily routines have stopped or shifted or transformed during the pandemic, doesn't mean that development and child development has stopped. And so as we start to look at how do we sort of maximize the benefits of screens during this time and minimize the harm in the early years, we have to sort of pay attention to what are kids practicing. But we also want to ground this very short session in the current goal, which is to root it in the time of this pandemic. Because this is not a time where we're sitting down and we're crafting our perfect digital lives. And in many ways, some of the things that we know would be optimal for children's development, we are having to get really creative. We are having to problem solve. We don't have the support and the professionals that oftentimes help us with our young children. So as we look at offering a couple pieces of advice, just remember that the current goal right now is to do the very best that we can to stay safe, healthy, and connected during this time. And screen time is certainly one factor to pay attention to, but it's not the only factor. And so we want to remind you and give you permission to take into account not just screen time, but all kinds of things like your child's temperament, your health, your energy, your mental health, your work. What's true for one family if a person has COVID-19 or is an essential worker on the front lines versus another family, you might be making a very different set of trade-offs. And so while we want to pay attention to screens, we also don't want to add sort of quote-unquote screen time guilt to a long list of stressors during the pandemic. Once we start paying attention to the child as much as we do to the screen, we can start to get a sense of when is it helping and when is it getting in the way. And we can offer just a couple gems of advice as you start asking that question within the context of your own family system. What should I be paying attention to or mindful of as I think about how to make sure that screens are helping and not hurting? And these ingredients are not new to, time during COVID-19. These are core ingredients for healthy development that have always been true for young children. So then the question is, how do we start making choices with these in mind? So it's less about screens are good or screens are bad for kids, but how do we make sure that we're prioritizing connection and relationships, that we're prioritizing play, and that even though we're stretching and problem solving and likely having a little more screen time than maybe we would otherwise, that we're still finding places to set limits, especially where it matters most. So we're just gonna briefly go through these with a couple of examples. of how paying attention to these three elements is key to helping young children get the most out of so-called screen time, right? So the first is connection. We could do a two-hour webinar just on this, but this is, you know, a half-hour short session. So let's just, remind you that children learn in the context of relationships. And this is true in study after study after study. I'll just give you a brief example. There's been a lot of research prior to this moment in history about, you know, what is the impact, for example, of ebooks or e-readers on young children's literacy development? And the question is, you know, is it better to read to a young child in a paper book or an electronic device? And a group of researchers started looking at this question, and their initial studies, essentially what they did is they took, adults and little kids, and they gave half the group paper books and half the books e-readers or e-books. And then they had the adults read to the young children, and same book, but just different format. And then they came back to the young children after they had been read the book, and they asked them questions. And they asked them questions about what we call sort of surface story structure. So who was in the story? Where was it? Setting, those kinds of things. And all the kids, regardless of what they were read to on, did quite well. But then they started asking what we call questions about deep story structure. So things like, well, what was the moral of it? Or what was the point of the story? What did the characters learn? Can you apply it in a different context? And what the researchers found initially was that the children who were read to in a paper book were able to answer those questions, and the ones read to on an e-reader sort of failed miserably. And all of the headlines across the country, you know, ran, you know, e-readers are ruining children's literacy, and, you know, electronics are destroying pre-literacy in early childhood. Now, the researchers were like, wait, let's dig into the data and look at the study a bit further. And what they found is that it wasn't even as much a study about electronics as it was about the power of connection and human relationship in the context of a child's learning, and especially young children. And so what they found is that parents who read to their kids on e-readers sounded a lot different than parents who were reading to their kids in books. Parents who were reading their kids books were like, the little, you know, Rocio's going to the store and she's getting this. Have you ever been to the store? And it was this warm, caring, back and forth dialogue. And the adults who were reading to the kids on the e-reader were saying things like, you know, Rocio's going to the store, touch the store, press here, don't break it, swipe your finger, swipe it, don't touch it, don't break it, let me do it, right? And so essentially the relationship had changed in profound ways. The child was so stressed about maybe breaking the device or operating it correctly, but of course they didn't absorb the lesson of the story. And so all the researchers did is they just put age-appropriate, you know, padding on the iPads and reminded the adult to enjoy the child and enjoy the story and make it about the relationship and the conversation. And when they did that, all of the differences between the two devices went away. And in study after study after study, what we see is that when technology is enhancing interaction or a part of interaction, when we can bring it into the context of conversation and talking, that is where children learn best. And so one of the questions we can ask during the pandemic is technology consistently replacing interaction, or is it enhancing it? And we underline the word consistently because real talk, parenting is hard. Parenting during a pandemic is even harder. So of course you have more Paw Patrol in your house right now. Of course you've got more screen time. The question is that over time, is it starting to be the default mode where kids are plugging in to technology instead of towards each other? What we know from the research is that we would be better off if we're trying to do the laundry while our 2-year-old is around. We would be better off having them roll around in the socks and talking to them about the laundry than handing them a device that's trying to teach them the colors of the socks. And so these sort of everyday moments when we have to have screens on, great, or if we can watch it with them or talk with them about it, the better. So one question you can ask yourself, right? Is technology consistently replacing interaction or enhancing it? What could we be doing instead? If the alternative is that we're not interacting, it's super stressful, and we're potentially going to be having, you know, I'm trying to get dinner on the table, somebody else is working, then the alternative is not that more to more developmentally enriching. But if the alternative is that we could be having a conversation while I'm having a chore, or I could have them being investigating something that I'm doing, or just talking with them, that's probably a better use of time than screens. So connection, relationship. If that is the first lesson from screen time in early childhood, then the second sort of comes along as sort of the twin pillars of the ingredients for thriving, and that is play. And so, Dad, you want to talk a little bit about play?
Now, if we go back to that question of what could we be doing instead, I think one of the things that we want kids to be doing instead of interacting with screens is play. And the reason is because play is actually very, very serious business. It sounds kind of counterintuitive, but it's actually very, very serious business in terms of children's learning. You know, Mr. Rogers knew this. Play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning, but actually it is serious learning. Play is the work of childhood, particularly for very young children. You know, when they are playing with their, what they're doing is they're experimenting. They're experimenting with the world. You know, if I drop this spoon off the high chair, what happens to it? That's actually a physics experiment. You know, if I mix these two things together, how does it taste? That's actually a chemistry experiment. We don't talk about it like that. We talk about it as children playing, but they're learning a tremendous amount when they're doing that. Now, you know, the people who want to sell us video games and online games to say, well, you can do all those things online. Well, it's not that you can't do some of those things online, but there is really no replacement for real world learning, where kids literally are not only learning about the world through physics and chemistry and everything else, but they're also learning how to get along, learning how to cooperate, the learning how to resolve conflict that might come up. Think, for example, you know, the 3 or 4 year olds who love to do role playing. When they're doing role playing, they are actually building something that brain scientists call executive function. They're making up, they're actually using their brains to kind of take on different roles. So one of the things that we want to see if we can, during the pandemic, to the extent that we can keep it going, one of the things we want to do is to help have our children play, have as much time as we can with real world play. Because the best learning happens when it's hands-on, when they're doing things, when it's minds on, when their brains are engaged, and when their feelings are on, they're enjoying it, they're having fun. When all of those things are together, then those, you know, those children are learning a tremendous amount.
And so as we think about the you know, the science of play, how important play is for learning, and also, by the way, for stress and emotional regulation, right? One of the ways that young children work through the complexities of what they're experiencing is through play. So obviously, my dad just shared, we want to make sure that that's not getting crowded out, especially during a very stressful time. But I'll also reground us, right, in that the current goal is that we're doing the best that we can to stay safe, healthy, and connected during this time. And so how can we bring this learning about the spirit of play into our choices around screen time as well? My dad just shared and kind of points to that third ingredient, that it's going to be certainly a time to set some boundaries and make sure that they're getting that offline real world play. But what about online? Because it's very clear in the research that from early childhood all the way through adolescence, when you look at the outcomes, a screen is not a screen is not a screen. Meaning that this idea of screen time is actually a bit misleading, because different kinds of content, different kinds of stories, right, shape children in different ways. The ways that they use the tools, sort of cause different outcomes. And so our recommendation is to actually not just bring the spirit of play to your offline choices, but into your online choices as well. And let me show you a couple of examples. So the children, early childhood sort of apps in the App Store are dominated by what we call sort of drill and practice worksheets, interactive worksheets, if you will. Right, so just a reminder that the education section in the App Store, there is not a group or a panel of child development professionals who approve those. So it's, in the words of the Joan Ganz Cooney Foundation, it's sort of the Wild West, that it's hard to know what kind of content you're getting. But if we were to compare sort of what we call a drill in practice, so a child is just being asked to sort of drag something over and over again or answer the same kinds of questions, identifying letters over and over again, that can be soothing to us as parents. It's like, oh, look, they're learning their letters and numbers. There's nothing wrong with learning your letters and numbers, but the real work of early childhood is about developing perspective taking and imagination and turn taking and emotional regulation, right? And flexibility and all of those sort of so-called soft skills that kids learn through play. So if you were to sort of compare this sort of interactive worksheet with an app, maybe that is about exploring homes, right? And so encouraging a child, if they have a tablet or were issued one from a preschool, that, right, that they are looking at their own home, they're looking at the homes on their block, or they're looking at bird and animal dwellings in the backyard. And then maybe there's an activity where then they make a dwelling. And so you compare this, what they're both using iPads, but the child is bringing a lot more to the second activity than to the first. So Lisa Guernsey says, you know, ask not what is coming out of the iPad, but what is going into it. So as we start looking at the kinds of apps that we download, even open-ended play where, you know, older preschoolers can even just be using their fingers to draw on the tablet, where there aren't prescribed rules. If you don't do this right, you don't get the gold star. But it allows the same sort of creativity maybe that Play-Doh does, right? So those are the kinds of things that we're looking for in apps that are developmentally appropriate. So the Joan Ganz Cooney Center has shared a few just quick questions that we can use as parents as we're sort of assessing whether an app is actually developmentally appropriate. Not just makes us feel good, like they're learning things like letters and numbers, but are they doing that sort of rich infrastructure work that play and inquiry does? So questions like, does it connect different experiences? Does it help us have fun together? So are we playing games? Are we using media together? Does it bridge activities? So is it helping us understand the pandemic? Am I watching a Daniel Tiger about started washing my hands and then I'm doing a hand washing thing with my family, right? So how can it help prepare and help children understand what's going on? Does it allow your child to learn and grow, right? So this last one provides age-appropriate content rather than passive tapping. And obviously passive tapping, right? It's a pandemic. Sometimes we just got to get dinner on the table. But over time, as this drags on, and we're looking at a long time of living and learning in this way, if all your child is being asked to do is to drag or tap, there might be an opportunity lost there. And there might be better apps out there for your kid. And then finally, going back to that first tip is, does it encourage interaction? Does it provide opportunities to talk? Does it offer ways to play or create together, right? Or finally, does it, you know, connect us to grandparents and other ways of getting creative during this time? So if you're looking for, you know, specific apps and things, we don't have time in this specific short session to do that, but check out, you know, PBS Parents Play and Learn for ideas of ways that kids are maybe on an app because you need to get something done because we live in the real world, but then some ideas for how you can talk to your kid about that or build on that experience. Tap, Click, and Read is another resource if you just Google that with some other curators. So how to find apps, right? So if you don't feel like the last thing you can do right now is like research developmentally appropriate apps during this time, then use some of these other curators, whether it's Common Sense Media, Tap, Click, and Read to kind of get a sense of, is the content appropriate for the age of my child? And if it's an app, can my child bring their own creativity, bring their own ideas and their own active learning to the experience. So we want to pay attention to, are we interacting? We want to pay attention to play. And that can happen both online and offline. This is not just about screen free time. This is about prioritizing those in both of those spaces. But the hard reality, at least for me, of parenting that's become really clear is that even the best uses of screen time, there just is a limit. And my kids can become really dysregulated if they're just constantly on screen. So there still is a really big role, especially in early childhood, for boundaries. And we're just going to talk about it briefly before we wrap up. So Dad, you want to just remind us, because I need the reminders.
One of the real challenges among the challenges, I should say, is that one of the challenges that we've heard about from parents is has to do with time and putting boundaries around time. Now, of course, as we've referenced many times, right now parents are under tremendous pressure because many parents are holding down three full-time jobs: parenting, online teacher, perhaps, making sure the schoolwork continues, and trying to also, in many cases, hold down a job, either working from home or having to go to work and then come home. And so it's understandable that for many children, they are spending more time in front of screens than they do under normal circumstances. And the convenience, of that and the opportunity we've talked about during this webinar, but we've also heard from parents is that when it's time to stop. And I talked to a parent not too long ago who talked about a preschool child. So they weren't talking about a teenager, that when they ask them to, okay, now it's time to put away the iPad, the video is over, it was a tremendous temper tantrum. And so I think one of the challenges is trying to put some boundaries around the amount of time so that they can do some of those other activities that we've talked about. So here are some tips to try to deal with that. It's important to let kids know ahead of time what the boundary is, okay? So if we're gonna let them watch a video or do something online for the half hour that we're spending getting dinner on the table, then we need to let them know, okay? And get them to agree at the end of 30 minutes, now it's gonna be time to stop. And if you need to put a timer on so that they can keep track of the time, that might be an assist. And then choose a consequence that you can live with. So we let the kids know ahead of time, if it becomes an argument when it's time to stop, then this is going to be the consequence. But make sure it's a consequence that you can live with, especially during this time of the pandemic. And let children know that if they choose to have a tantrum or to throw things when the screen time is over, then it may be that they're choosing not to use that screen time until they can do it without completely losing control. And then it's very, very important to follow through on those limits, consequences, and it's very important to follow through consistently, because kids will quickly figure out, because kids are smart, kids will quickly figure out whether we're serious or whether we're not. And so it's very important to follow through consistently, because down the road, then that's going to make it much, much easier. And then to coach and practice a different response, this is what we can do when the show is done. So that those are those alternative activities that we talked about. So these are some tips to help deal with that challenge of, okay, when is it time to stop the screen time?
And of course, these are especially useful with our older preschoolers, right? We're not going to turn to our six-month-old and be like, if you choose. What we know from the research is that we don't have a lot of good evidence that under 18 months of age that screens do much developmentally for kids, mostly because they interfere with what kids do need, which is connection, snuggling, talking, exploring, right? So as we start looking at, the four-year-old that's tantruming, this is where we can start to make it clear that if you're choosing to throw things across the room at the end of this Daniel Tiger show, then you're choosing no screen time tomorrow or no screen time later tonight. So these will post a little sort of developmentally what you could expect at age by age when limits and consequences start to be more effective, and when sort of redirecting makes more sense in the earlier years. But either way, we don't have time to take a deep dive. But I think for me as a parent, as I consider screen time during a pandemic, I hope that these three ingredients are useful, and I hope that they're affirming, because for me, this is not a time where it's helpful to say screens are bad or screens are toxic, because all it does is sort of put another layer of guilt on top of what's kind of an essential tool for just navigating the complex trade-offs of this time. But at the same time, it's helpful to remember that just because screens aren't bad doesn't mean that there aren't some really critically important things, especially between the ages of 2 and 5, when kids might be using more screens to pay close attention to. So as you continue to try to stay safe, healthy, and connected during this time, we hope that you pay extra special attention to connection and relationship, whether that's watching shows together, talking about their shows, or turning it off and talking about the laundry. That you pay special attention to whether or not the spirit of play online and offline is part of your child's life. And then that we just support each other in the hard work of setting limits, because it's often a delayed gratification activity. So enjoy your connections with grandparents online, enjoy your play, and thank you so much for spending a little bit of what is no doubt a very busy time in your lives with us. So we'll be posting the recording and put a few follow-up resources as well. But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.